The phone number ending in 1458, can you please state your name?
Karen Gary.
Thank you.
Can I mute now?
Yes, you can. It's star six.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello. Hello.
Ken, did you just log on?
Yes, I did.
Thank you, Ken. The phone number ending in 7111, can you please state your name for the record?
This is Richard.
Hi, Richard. Just so you know, Roy will not be attending, so you will need to run the meeting. Just
okay.
A heads up.
Thank you.
The phone number ending in 0301, can you please state your name?
Hi, it's Mike Murphy.
Hi, Mike. Thank you.
Okay.
And you can mute your phone by star 6.
10-4.
Thank you. Can you state your name?
Yes, my name is Paul Harmon.
All right, perfect, Paul. Thank you so much. Now, I will repeat again for everyone, to mute your phone is star 6. To mute and unmute is to push star 6.
Okay, I'm going to call the meeting to order. I think given the nature of this meeting, we will not do the Pledge of Allegiance, then can we go right to the roll call, Danielle?
Sounds good. Joe Spear?
Here.
Sharon Hartung? Here. Ken Range?
Here.
Richard Heath?
Here.
And Roy Davis is absent. We do have Connie Huntsman and Martha Rice on the line, too.
Okay, who else do we have on the line, do you know? Danielle?
Yeah, we have Paul Harmon, we have Kenny with the Boat Shop, we have Karen Gary and Mike Murphy. And that is all the participants at this time.
Okay. Thank you. Hey, are there any modifications, additions, or changes to the agenda? Okay, don't hear any. Anybody want to have a declaration of potential conflicts of interest? Joe?
I'm good.
Karen?
No.
Ken?
No conflicts.
And I have none either. I have a motion to approve the agenda.
I make a motion.
Ken, I'll make a motion to approve the agenda.
Okay, do we have a second?
I second it.
Okay, so we have a motion by Ken Raines to second Bill Spear to approve the agenda. Any discussion? Hearing none, Danielle, roll call.
Joe? Joe?
Oh, yes, I hit the wrong button.
It's all right. Sharon? Ken?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes.
Now, one more, there was someone that came online, the phone number ending in 9929. Can you please state your name for the record?
Yes, hi, Jack Aiken.
Thank you, Jack.
You bet.
Okay, approval of the meeting minutes. Would you like to make a motion?
I'll make a motion to approve the meetings of the minutes of A and B, October 2nd, October 20th, 2020. I do believe that's the 2nd or October 1st.
Okay.
I'll second that.
Okay, motion by Joe and a second by Ken to approve the minutes of Thursday, October 1st and Tuesday, October 20th. Items number A and B. Discussion? Hearing none. Danielle?
Joe?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Ken?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes.
And then one more, so there is another participant that logged on, ending in 2408. Can you please state your name for the record?
Sure, Danielle, it's Dan Frazier.
Hi, Dan, thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, do we have any public comments, Danielle?
Not as far as I know. I have not been given any.
Okay. Does anybody on the phone want to make a public comment at this time?
No.
Hello? Hi there.
Go ahead.
Hi there. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can. Can you state your
name? Hi there. I'm sorry. I'm having... My name is Sky Marie McDonald.
Okay. And did you have a public comment at this time?
I did. I just wanted to bring something up. I'm shooting a movie. You know, I run Wild Rivers Conservatory of Dance, the local ballet studio, and our Nutcracker was canceled this year because of COVID. We were not able to do a in-person live performance. This would have been our 6th year. And instead, we've decided to create a movie about the Nutcracker and more so about kids' experience in 2020. And so we have a film here from New York City and a director and film team from New York City are all here. And we are shooting a very COVID safe production. It'll be shot on locations all around the local area. And we would like to shoot some footage down by the harbor and wanted to find out about permissions to do that. We have all the insurance and everything we need. We've gone by, you know, all the proper protocols.
I would suggest
Hello, Mike Crow.
The port manager, Gary Dillon, and talk to him about that.
I'm sorry, I can barely hear you.
I would suggest get a hold of the port manager, Gary Dillinger, and talk to him about that.
Okay. Okay. Is that all I would need to do is talk with him?
Yes.
All right, great. Thank you so much.
Okay. Any public comment? Okay, hearing none, we'll move on to the management report, starting with the financial report. Gary?
Hello, everybody. Can you hear me all right? I hope. So the total revenues for the port in October is $308,179. The total expenses were $301,711. Our net income in October was a positive $6,468. We did receive some reimbursement funds from the Coronavirus Relief Fund. That was for the purchase of restroom equipment and also payroll for extra cleaning of the restrooms. We had some unusual expenses. We abandoned four boats. Some expenses on that was the excavator, renting an excavator to smash up the boats, and then the extra expenses on disposal costs from CTR. The other unusual expense was we bought a protective enclosure for our boat launch machine. We got the idea while visiting another port, they had bought enclosed their boat launch machine with a bus stop enclosure. So that enclosure cost $4,500 with $1,400 delivery. So when that comes in, we're going to install that enclosure to protect our boat launch machine. Some of our expenses comparison from last year, and the general fund revenues are down $233,000. And so far, some of the reasons for that reduction is our accounting changed from accrual basis to cash basis. Also, COVID-19 impacts and possibly some of the wildfires that may have played a role. But we need more time to find out if COVID-19 really did impact us that much too. So we'll be studying those costs. That's pretty much what I have on a financial report. Any questions?
I'm good, Gary.
This is Ken. I'm good.
I'm good. Thank you for the report.
Okay, we'll move on next.
Sharon, can you speak up a little more? We can barely hear you.
Oh, I said I'm good, and thanks for the report.
All right, thank you.
Move to the safety report.
So port staff was trained on commercial mowing and the new state mask requirements. Some incidents that happened on October 18th, the Warrior II was receiving ice, and when they left, their gantry hit the supporting piles, creating the gangway to fall and the pilings to break. The port did report this to all insurance, our side and theirs, and the vessel owner was contacted, and Travis may have more to say on that in his Harbor Master report. But that is all I have for safety. Is there any questions?
Danielle, I'd like to ask Kenny if he's on the phone from the boat shop a question.
He is on the phone.
Kenny, you there?
To speak, Kenny, you can push *6 or I can unmute you.
Yeah, I'm here, Ken.
regarding the incident you had on the 29th, was that a burglary in progress, or was that a homeless person that, you know, can you tell us a little bit about that?
I'm not 100% sure what incident you are referring to, Ken, on the 29th of this month?
Yeah, you had an alarm going off at the boat shop. And when security arrived, the sheriffs had already detained the individual, and the individual was trespassed. I'd like to know why he wasn't arrested, basically, if he was in your building.
Boy, Ken, that was at the old shop, I'm assuming, I apologize. I'm not familiar with any of that. The last, unless they did something and I wasn't aware of, my last alarm activation in the boat shop was a motion alarm that went off due to a bird or a rat or something. But I didn't know of anyone being arrested or being trespassed that I was told anything about.
The person got trespassed, but it's number 8 on our safety monthly safety report. Guess you've answered the question.
Yeah, I apologize, Ken. I'm not familiar with that. You know, the security company I was with is high-tech security. And if they had set an alarm off, they didn't notify me. Normally, anytime I have an alarm activation, they'd call my number. But I can tell you, a couple of years ago, we did have an incident, and they trespassed that person too, and it was a vagrant, and they didn't have room to house, so they just trespassed him and gave him a citation. That may have happened again, because the sheriff, unless it's a pretty serious crime, they won't arrest them. They'll cite them and they'll cite and release. So you just write them a citation.
All right. Thank you.
Yep.
Any further discussion about the safety report? All right, hearing none, let's move to the Harbor Master Report.
All right, thank you. So it was a busy month, starting in the RV park. Tidewater finished delivering the rest of the blocks, and that block wall was completed, along with some new signage at the entrances that we left open. We also got the Zola's demoed and the parking lot put up. We got the traffic stops in and that all reconfigured over there. And we also got the striping done at the launch ramp. So a lot of good things for the port to get done before the winter hit. We did 78 work orders. The guys stayed pretty busy with getting things ready and with the moves. So overall, it was a busy month, but a good month. Is there any other questions about the report or anything else that happened at the port throughout the month?
I don't hear any, Travis. Thank you.
Thank you.
Move to the port manager report, Gary.
Yeah, thank you. So the port manager report. So we do have new mask mandates that came through our governor. That's one reason why we're kind of separated now from our port meeting. You know, we're training our employees and doing the best we can with the new mask orders. Last month, Travis and I visited some other ports. Kind of mentioned that earlier in my financial report that we got some good ideas visiting other ports. We visited Depot Bay, even though that's a small port, but it was interesting seeing that port. Port of Garibaldi, we went to, and Port of Siosala. All those three ports were pretty interesting to go to. The traffic counter at the RV park, we were still racking up a lot of vehicles going through there. We're at 183,368 vehicles now, since June 30th anyways. We're still averaging about 1,200 cars per day. I got Rich Roberts doing a lot line adjustment for the Rigetti property. Hope to see some paperwork here in the next couple weeks to get filed with the county and get that taken care of. The COVID letter and voluntary payment plan went out. It went out to 7 commercial tenants and 7 commercial mortgage fishermen. So they have until next March to pay the any debts that are owed to the port. The visitor center did notify the port that they're ending their lease November 30th. And Seal Cove Realty hasn't paid since October 1st, and we are canceling that their lease, and their lease is going to end November 30th, so that little building is going to be available to rent as well. But then there's about 12 other mortgages that we're looking at canceling for non-payment throughout the basin. We are looking at couple security company outfits for security cameras throughout the port, and I think we'll probably have a special meeting just to cover that here in a couple weeks. I think that's about any other questions on the report.
I do have a question. What becomes of the visitor center? Are we going to lease that out again, or what happens to it?
Yeah, Yeah, once she cleans everything out and, you know, we clean up the site, I think it was put it out there for lease. We'll put an ad in the paper on the website and whatnot to lease it out again. Yep.
Okay. And the same thing with the Seal Cove building?
Yeah. Yep. So same thing with the Seal Cove building. Yep.
Okay.
So, Gary, I have a question.
Yes.
Under your upcoming projects where you're going to clean all the port signage, are we putting up all new flags to replace all the ones we have that are rather tattered?
Oh, yeah. Sorry about that. I forgot to mention that. Yeah, we actually put up new flags yesterday. So we have a stockpile of flags that we put up, and we're buying another batch of flags to have in stock. But, yeah, new flags did go up. The American flag, we're going to change that out. We had to order a new American flag. We didn't have one in stockpile, but yeah, we're going to have those new American flags hopefully in a week or two.
Thank you.
Yep, you're welcome.
Okay, any other questions for Gary?
No, I'm good, guys.
All right, well, hearing none, I'll entertain a motion for the approval of the report.
This is Joe. I'll make a motion to approve the management reports for October 2020 as discussed.
Okay.
I'll second that.
Okay, we have a motion by Joe Spear and a second by Ken Range to approve the management reports for October 2020. Any further discussion? Hearing none. Danielle?
Joe?
Yes.
Ken? Ken?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes. Okay, that brings us to action items. Action item A, the annual financial report for year 2019 and 2020. Gary?
Yeah, I'll just, I think Connie would like to speak briefly about the report. I'll let her go ahead and speak.
Okay, Connie, welcome and go ahead.
Okay, hello. The audit of the Port of Brookings Harbor has been completed for the year ended June 30th, 2020. The auditor's communication to governance and management had no significant deficiencies or material weaknesses. There is no follow-up plan of action to the Secretary of State. I'm really impressed with the way the finances are going. Having the extra financial consultant preparing the financial statement. Kim does a wonderful job of the accounting transactions. It was quite a whole lot easier this year to audit than it has in the past year or two. I'm pleasantly pleased. Thank you for all the work that the finance consultant and financial officer are doing. There was the IFA debt. There's a refund of the payment that was made in June 2020. So that puts the debt service fund ahead budget-wise. There appears to be enough money in the USDA fund. There's not going to be a problem making that debt. I'm kind of telling all my audit clients this year to keep a sharp eye on your budget. The revenues coming in this next year are going to be hard to get, and it's going to be tight, particularly for capital projects. It would definitely require some grant funding. I don't see a lot of wiggle room in the general fund to take on a large capital project unless there's some guaranteed financing or grants on the way. Overall, it looked very good for June 30th, 2020. This next year, though, keep an eye on everything. It's going to get tight.
Okay, Connie, thank you. Any questions for Connie? Okay, hearing none. Gary, do you have one?
No, I don't have any questions.
That's good news and compliments to everybody. Good job. Let's move to the Pacific Seafood Group sublease.
Oh, wait a second. We need a motion to approve the draft.
I'm sorry.
We need a motion to approve the draft audit report annually.
Go back and a motion for the audit report.
Yeah. I'll make a motion.
All right. This is Joe. Go ahead, Sharon, if you're doing it. I can barely hear you.
Okay, I'll make a motion to approve the draft annual financial report for fiscal year 2019 through 2020.
I second it. This is Joe.
Okay, we have a motion by Sharon and a second by Joe to approve the draft annual financial report for fiscal year 2020. Any further discussion? Hearing none.
Joe?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Ken? Ken?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes. Okay, now let's move the Pacific Seafood Group sublease.
Yeah, we never received a sublease document to review. I'd like to just put this on hold until the next meeting.
Okay. Any commissioner or board members have a comment or a concern about that?
No.
No.
Okay. All right. Let's then move on to the RV park restroom project. Gary?
All right. So our original position for the restroom shower building, it lies right on the borderline of the floodplain, the 100-year floodplain. So we found that out. And in order, well, to do this work, if we want to keep it in the same place, we're going to have a lot of extra work involved to keep it in that same location. The easiest and least expensive is to move it towards the entrance of the RV park around sites 13, 14, and 15, 16 area. And that's basically what our issue is. We need to relocate the restroom to get out of the floodplain, 100-year floodplain zone. I got Mike Crow from Crow Clay Associates online. If you have any questions for him, he needs to do some engineering drawing changes, some modifications and whatnot. He did get the information from Harbor Sanitary with what they're requesting. I think he's going to make those changes as well. So we're going to have some additional costs to make these changes. Does the board have any questions to either me or Mike Crow?
No, I don't.
Okay, I don't hear any questions then.
Well, I have a question.
All right, go ahead.
Can you hear me? how much longer do you think we're going to be with all this, when they will be getting back to us on some of these the drawings they have to redo and the costs? I mean, are we looking at a couple of months, or I mean, where are we on that, please?
I suspect, this is Mike Crow. That's a difficult question to answer right now, because the governor just came out that all of the work's got to occur from home if possible. And so I've got some staff in and some staff out. But I would be, I would say I'm going to hope to have everything done before Christmas.
Okay, well, thank you. I was just kind of curious when we would have that done, so that I know that we're like 100 days or something for the building to be done and then delivered. So I was just trying to figure out when we were actually going to start the building next year on this.
Yeah, I would like to get this out to bid around the first of the year again. I mean, we had it out to on the street and then had to cancel that because we got the information about the floodplain. And I'd like to get a really quick turnaround on this and get it back out on the street before everybody forgets about it, because it was well advertised.
Well, I thank you very much.
Okay.
Mike, do you want to...
Another question.
Yeah, one question. Mike, you wanted to say approximate what your cost is for the revisions?
It's about $6,500. Most of that is going to the... engineer, the mechanical and electrical engineer, and then we've got to do the redrafting, and he's got to redraft his and do, because of the relocation, some of the circuits that we were, some of the transformers we were moving and the circuits he was working on are going to have to change. And so he's got to recalculate those. That's the big time, is basically just redrafting and then him doing his calculations for the loads and shifting transformers and coordinating that with Coos Creek Electric.
Okay. Okay. Thank you, Mike.
Yep.
Anything further?
Richard, if we make a motion to approve the move in the laundry building and also the additional cost in the motion, I'd appreciate that.
Okay. So would someone care to make a motion with that in mind?
This is Joe. I make a motion to relocate the restroom and laundry buildings outside the floodplain zone as proposed, with the estimated cost of $6,500.
In additional engineering. Okay. We have a motion by Joe, a second by Sharon. Any discussion? Hearing none, Danielle?
Joe?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Ken?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes. And that moves us to the Harbor Master and crew office space. Is this going to be you, Gary, or Travis?
Well, maybe both of us. I'll start off. with the basic overview. Our new shop operations are in the old boat shop and moor building. And with the new COVID regulations about working in the office, you can't have more than one employee in the office, or you got to be wearing your mask. Somebody comes in your office, you got to be putting your mask on. Our office is pretty crowded as it is. So to meet some of these regulations, we need to relocate Travis and Brent and basically our field staff, because our field staff comes in and out all the time. So to meet all these regulations and to make it, you know, work-wise here, that's one of our best solutions is relocate our field staff into that building. And that's going to require some remodeling in the existing office there. And I think this could be reimbursable through the coronavirus relief fund. I think it meets the criteria for that. I think Martha could speak on that too if she wants. And I think right now we're estimating $10,000 to $15,000 to do that work. Travis is good.
I can answer any questions if you guys have any questions. The port staff is going to do all the work, majority except for the electrician work, just to keep us in-house, keep the cost in-house, and it'll help us with the procurements, not having to do procurements.
Okay. Arthur, do you have a thought about whether this would qualify for COVID reimbursement?
Yeah, I think this is similar to the conversation we had before about a new office building, in that looking at the criteria to be met, it certainly seems to fit those criteria. As we said before, that it wasn't a guarantee, that just because staff and myself seem to think that it fit, that it would indeed be reimbursed. And, you know, with the other project was a lot larger, and therefore the commission wasn't comfortable taking that gamble. Of course, this is a lot smaller project in terms of cost.
Okay. All right. Thank you. We have any
Richard, I'd like to make a comment.
Go ahead, Ken.
I don't like the idea that we have to do it, but I think we don't have any choice. And if we get paid back, that's a wonderful thing. But either way, we need to do this as soon as possible.
Any other thoughts or comments?
I think that it's a good move on the port's part, because the port office is just not adequate to safely to operate for our staff employees at this time.
Well, I think it makes a lot of sense to get the operations part of the port activities out of the main office where the management's going on. It seems to me it would be more efficient and flow better that way. So I certainly think it's warranted from that perspective, as well as an employee safety perspective. Any other thoughts on this or comments? Okay, hearing none, I'll entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion to approve remodeling port warehouse office to meet COVID-19 regulations and submit expenses to Corona Virus Relief Fund for reimbursement.
Okay.
Second.
All right, we have a motion by Ken Range and a second by Sharon Hartung to approve the request to move the office. Any further discussion? Hearing none, Danielle?
Joe?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Ken?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes. Okay, that'll move us into information items. Information item A, the fuel dock project. Gary?
Yeah, so Legacy, they have started on the grading around the fuel dock tanks, above ground tanks. The piling equipment that they need to drive the pile underneath the failing structure, access structure to our fuel dock is going to be another month down the road. They're estimating December 14th to be on site to do that work, and probably be about a month long to finish it. So while they're doing some of the grading around the fuel tanks, Jack Aiken's been out here as well, looking at the work. So there's some minor changes that we got. We're going to remove the curb and gutter along the edges. And also, there on the drawings, there's a section of asphalt that wasn't shown to be asphalt. So we're going to add that little section for asphalt to be on there. And we found a sewer pipe cleanout lid that we're going to add a manhole cover over that lid. So we got a few minor additions to the contract, but we're going to have more credits, I believe. And Jack also has been looking at the subgrade, and he feels confident that the asphalt section can be reduced from 18 inches down to 14 inches. So those are some of the changes that are happening kind of on the fly. At the end of the project, we'll look at all the changes, and hopefully we'll be on the plus side of our changes, where we're going to add more dock work, because we need to use all this money up from Business Oregon, because if we don't use it, we're going to lose it. So any extra money that we get for these changes, we want to use it towards the dock work, repairing our docks. Okay. And Jack's on the line if you have any questions. So that's all I got on that one.
So am I correct in assuming that the sewer pipe clean out was buried in gravel?
It was covered up by a few inches of gravel. Yeah.
Okay. Did you know it was there?
No.
Okay. All right. Well, it sounds like you've got that figured out to at least get it protected.
Yep.
Questions or comments for Gary on the fuel dock project? I have one question. It'll show up on December 15th. How much longer are we going to delay this?
Jack's been talking to him more than I have. It sounds like they're not going to delay it any further, but that's what they told us. I hope it doesn't delay anymore.
Okay. All right. Anything else on this item? Okay, hearing none, let's go to the commercial restroom's shower door keypad lock.
Yeah, so we got the keypad lock put on just last week. And so far we've seen improvements there already just in the last few days. So we believe it's a good move that was long overdue.
Okay. Any questions or comments from the commissioners? All right. We'll move to the Catalyst Seafood Outdoor Seating and Stage.
Yeah, Richard, I want to make a comment on that.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, I think it's nice they sent us a what their intention is with what they want to do with the building. I think that first, there's nobody here from Catalyst Seafood tonight, correct? Anybody on the phone?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
This is Willie.
Hey. Appreciate what you guys sent in, but you attached your building without ever talking to our port manager permanently on your or a building you leased that belongs to the port. I think you need to go talk to Gary. Also, you need to talk to him at the same time about having events, because you're going to have an event permit, and you're going to have submit something, whatever Gary says, a week, 2 weeks, a month ahead of time before you have an event where you're going to block off that parking lot or the road. That's all.
Yeah, were you able to read the email we sent in response?
I read it. I'm looking at it again right now.
Yeah, so we're fully aware. We're fully aware that any time we would be doing anything off the lease property, that we would have to get approval from the port ahead of time.
Well, you attached a building to it without ever talking to him. You know, not a temporary.
Are you referring to the elevated platform that we put in there? Are you calling that a building?
No, you have something attached to the roof. It's, I don't know if it's your lighting that's attached to the roof. There's something you attach to the roof.
Willie, all I'm suggesting is you go talk to Gary.
Yeah.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah, that was just that's that antenna structure that we were just gonna hang a shade off that for now. Well, not for now, but like in the spring. We're not putting a, I guess that's what you're talking about, the structure, the light, the stuff we got the lights hanging on.
Right.
Well, it's a stage, the lights, whatever you want to call it. You've attached it permanently to the port property.
Okay. Well, we can, certainly meet up and look it over and talk about it, and if we need to, we'll take it down.
No, go talk to Gary. I don't know if it's an issue or not. I don't know how it's fastened up there or what it, you know, anything about it.
Okay, you bet.
Okay, any other questions, comments?
Yes, I have a comment for Willie. Can you guys hear me okay?
Yeah, you bet, Sharon.
Oh, good. I really like your seating, and I really like the idea that you put that protective area up for your customers, so that, you know, there's no problem with them getting hit by a car, and it really looks good. And I really appreciate what you've done there. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate it.
Anything further on Teddy Food? Outdoor seating. Okay, hearing none, let's move to Zola's. This is on the water storage expansion. Gary?
Yeah, so a couple months ago, the board approved Zola's on the water to expand their existing storage area by removing their fence, relocating the Oregon State Marine Board sign. And they're going to extend their concrete pad, put in a larger catch basin, from what we understood. Well, it turns out that they were actually installing a whole new drain line, and they started this work without notifying the port. We asked them to stop and remove what they had started, and they did so. So everything's on hold. We found out that they didn't have any permits, no drawings. So we're not going to let them proceed until we see drawings, permits, and the whole nine yards going on there, and have our engineer review the plan before they move forward. So I'm expecting nothing's going to happen there until probably after the winter. So after having that experience, I'm probably come to the board in another meeting with a best management practice idea of any kind of future work on port property or port buildings, that we get drawings, engineering drawings, and they must be approved by the port and a port engineer before they proceed. That's all I got on that one. Any questions?
Okay.
So, Gary, is this something that maybe we could add a little stronger, more wordage in the leases to also cover this, as well as the best management practices?
Well, it does. There is a paragraph in there that the tenants are not allowed to do any work until they get approval by the port. We may want to have maybe a stronger motion when we approve these things, so it's clearly identified that they got to have these permits and drawings and approvals prior to work. So maybe the motion needs to be stronger. But I think the lease, Martha can speak for the lease language. I think the lease language is there for us.
Yeah, I believe the lease language is there for any buildings, specifically buildings that are owned by the port, should also be there in land leases. But I think what Gary's saying is true, and that the language is a little bit generic, and that it's just requires port approval and doesn't necessarily say that includes approval of plans, receipt of permits, and sign off by the port's engineer. So although in this situation, port approval at its most basic definition was not received. I think Gary's point is well taken, that even when it is given, we should be specific about what kind of review we want to have of each project.
Okay. So just to sum that up, Gary, what I heard is that they've ceased work on this and they will not begin again until you see all the stuff you required them to present, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you. Anything further on Zola?
Nope.
Okay. Hearing that, let's move on to the FEMA project planning.
All right. FEMA project planning. So there was a few changes that were, these are kind of like ideas that we're talking with Jack. One idea is instead of doing rock slope repairs at the boatyard, is installing some sheet pile to repair the slopes in that area. I asked Jack to do some possibilities of that if it fit in our budget with our FEMA project. Jack also was looking at purchasing a smaller dredge to do this work through the FEMA funds. This dredge would also stay with the port if we decide to buy it for the port for this project. It would stay with the port and do future maintenance dredging. So we wouldn't have to rely on the state's dredge or rely on a big FEMA disaster to do any dredging here. We can actually perform our own dredging. I kind of like that idea. The other idea with a small dredge is to break up this project instead of having such a large project happening at one time where we're impacting just about the entire port. Do it in phases. And also, while you're doing it in phases, we can actually control our cash flow. A big project, we don't have the cash to pay out before we get reimbursed from FEMA, because normally FEMA takes 30 days, sometimes longer, depending on what we're trying to get funds for. So I like the idea of doing this project in phases, and they allow you to do this work as long as you keep them abreast to when you're doing it and how you're doing it. So I don't think it's a problem, you know, making this project several years long. Let's see, what else was there? I got Jack on the line. If anybody has any questions about this dredge machine or his ideas throughout the port. So if we happen to buy this small dredge with all the changes that we're looking at doing for the gear storage, the RV park, we're not going to have too much space left here for despoils when we do dredge and maintenance dredging. So if we do buy a small dredge, we need to isolate a small area to place the dredge spoils and take care of the future port. I mean, that's the basic thing is we need to have a plan for the future dredging. And this port never really had a plan for future dredging that I could tell. So I think it's a great opportunity for the port.
I have a couple of questions. One, how does the cost of buying a new dredge compare to what we would have to have a dredge brought in and contract with?
Does Jack want to answer that one?
It's up to you, Gary. You've
done a lot more dredge projects than I have, so you're more qualified to answer that one.
This issue is not just brought up at the Port of Brookings, but other ports that I consult who constantly are dealing with the large mobilization, demobilization, knee-jerk, huge funding requirements of trying to get dredging done, where the needs are quite fluid among these ports. And that includes the Port of Brookings. The dredge that I'm talking about is an interesting, I've done, to give you an understanding, I was hired by another port to do an engineering feasibility study, where I looked at all the options for dredging, and including bringing in, the type of dredge that we've used here quite often, or several times. We use it for the tsunami. We use it for the ice house dredging. 440 horsepower Ellicott dredge that's owned by the state. And we looked at other types of, piggybacking with USACE contractors, subcontractors, and all these other, several other types of options. We came down to a submersible dredge. Now, my experience with that is I had specified a submersible dredge, which is still being successfully used at the port of Port Orford. However, it's being used by a crane, which a crane brings in hourly and mobilization costs, as well as reach issues when it comes to trying to use it for holding a dredge, a small dredge on the end of a crane. But we've found some pretty good technologies out there now, and one of them is the remote-controlled electrical or hydraulic, and the hydraulic has some disadvantages. In the feasibility study, we came down to utilizing an electrical remote-controlled multi-wired dredge, and they're actually being used quite prolifically. And the cost is actually would be less than a sixth or seventh of the cost that we have right now we have for dredging the port of Brookings for the what is it, 38,000 cubic yards that we want to dredge. But that's a one-time deal that we happen to be fortunate enough to have been able to gain FEMA concurrence with the $1.7 million needed to dredge. This equipment would probably cost, with including a wheeled generator, is in the area of the 165, probably $250,000 to $300,000 for the entire thing. And we could utilize hired labor, like we, you know, during, you guys weren't probably, no, I don't think any of you were here, but during the 2012 dredging project, one of the ways that we were able to control and also at the same time train our own people was we hired a contractor's employees temporarily for, as port employees during the dredging period. Now, there, as far as how you would finance it by employee and how you use employees, Gary and Travis and I have discussed that Gary has, you know, the best insight on manning such a dredge. But the dredge has the gives us the opportunity to do something that a lot of the ports really need, smaller ports really need but don't have, and that is the ability to respond to and be fluid on a regular basis, on a regular annual dredging maintenance program, rather than trying to wait every 7 to 10 years before you get an opportunity to get funding and the opportunity to come in and do a big, huge dredging project. Further, it allows us in terms of material handling to do something that you would not be able to do easily by utilizing a contracted dredge. The material that's coming out at 4,400 or 4,500 gallons per minute, 20% solids, is a huge mainstream of water that has to be handled. It's a serious engineering project and it's a serious construction project. And it covers, as Gary was mentioning, covers the entire port in order to be able to get that material up and get it stored. Then there's a lot of material handling. Now, this is, of course, within the FEMA's budget. However, the reappropriation of the dredge, because federal FEMA funding will allow you to keep equipment and materials for a limitless period of time, even though it was purchased by FEMA, as long as it continues to be applied to government projects. And that would be the case here. It would be, in other words, that dredge becomes the property of the Port of Brookings, because it will cost much less to dredge 38,000 cubic yards over a period of time, just from the standpoint of dredging costs alone, that it would to bring in any kind of dredging, other options that I have been able to find in my research. So that is that probably long-winded answer to the question.
Well, that answers my question. I have a second question for you, and that is, if we scale back the magnitude of what we're going to do and just in smaller bites, is there a way for us to store the dredge materials so that it can be made available to people if they wanted to haul it off?
Right. And of course, Gary was talking about the memorandums of understanding with local contractors and so on, which it, you know, having those materials is in a half acre area that Gary has identified and talked about, would be a very wise, it would give you a great deal of fluidity. Also, it would be where Gary was talking about, which I don't know if he's discussed this with you, but where he was talking about sediment storage is in close proximity to probably the most difficult of the three areas. When I say the three areas, I'm talking about the new proposed RV, the boat yard as the second, and the commercial area as the third. Well, the commercial area back over there where you guys, I'm sure, and you know where that is, that's by far the most difficult. And it would be very handy to have, you know, materials right there, stored right there to be used at the port's discretion, rather than, you know, be having to submit ourselves to the very large project that was approved by FEMA. We had to go with that because at the time we needed to get, you know, approval from FEMA and get the money. But as we've looked at this more closely, as is often the case, we're finding some real alternative methodologies. And of course, as you know, large projects quite often in construction and many other types of projects are phased just for that reason, which is manageability and cash flow. And that seems to be the ticket here. And the small dredge kind of is one of those kinds of nice answers that really answers all of those things. And not only does it add cash flow, but also adds some more money in the coffers for the $4 million, which is probably approved by FEMA. That $4 million could be much better spent for permanent structural improvements, including sheet pile wall and others. So that's why we were looking at this overall. It's kind of one of those approaches and strategies that would create an overall benefit for the port.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions or comments about this FEMA project?
I have a question. So with the FEMA dollars that we're going to be getting for the dredging, is there a time limit on the usage of that money, or is it open?
It's pretty much open. What you have to do, that's a matter of communication. And it's a very good question, because if you don't specify to FEMA that you're doing a phased project, what will happen, and you don't spend it in time, they can actually come and scoop up that money, and suddenly you find yourself without it. You will get it eventually, but there's no guarantees. You know, it depends on all kinds of stuff that we don't want anything to do with. So the key is, it's basically communicating the phase to FEMA at the time when we finally make that decision. And fortunately for us right now, in many ways, it's good for us that they have broken that down into what they're only paying for right now is the engineering and the permitting and all the stuff that we're doing right now and deliberating. All that's all part of what they're paying for. And in this process, we can structure, as long as we accomplish the scope of work that was originally approved by FEMA, our method of doing so, if we find a less expensive method of doing so than was approved, we can do it. They're going to accept it.
Hey, Jack, this is Gary.
Thank you.
I just want to add that we do quarterly reports. Once the FEMA project starts, we do quarterly reports that we have to do, and we give them updates of how things are going. But also, you know, this, I brought this up as this is like where we're kind of leading to. But I'm going to come back to the board to have like a final approval of this, basically what we're talking about, and you know, and phases and purchasing equipment. This isn't the final discussion of all this project, because I'm going to come back and have actually approval from the port board to move forward with this construction project. Does that make sense?
Yes, thank you.
Yeah.
And I'll have a PowerPoint, you know, to make it so that on the equipment, so that, you know, so that that can be really easily seen by everybody. They can see and see what's going on there.
Okay, anything further on this item?
I got a couple of things to say. I'm all for the dredge and everything. I've seen some little video watching it while Travis talking to Travis and Gary today. But I'm really interested between the cost of the 120 and the 150, both in electric and hydraulic, and the difference in upkeep, because I've got hydraulics and electric on my boats, and I know what I go through for cost of electric compared to hydraulic upkeep. I had a whole bunch I was going to say. I just wasn't writing it down. But I would really like to see the cost of the two first, the difference of the cost of the electric and the hydraulic version. And because you might want to get the 150 instead of that 120, if that's what we're looking at, Travis, because the 150 hydraulic might be not much more than the 120 electric. You know, I would really like to see the cost comparison myself.
You bet. Joe, that hydraulic cost Oh, wait, am I supposed to answer that? I'm sorry.
No, you can actually answer it, Jack. That's fine, too, or Travis, or both, or...
The hydraulic costing of the 150 you're referring to was $357,000. And
uh-huh.
my problem was it creates cumbersome equipment. I mean, it's got some real detractions to it. That's why I've spent quite a bit of time locating, and I will, of course, be presenting that when you guys really get to look at this for real. The method of maintenance, so who will be servicing right now? A lot more detail on that, because it is the question. What you just brought up is the question when it comes to having dredging equipment or any other equipment. But, you know, it's absolutely germane to the analysis. And there's no way in the world you guys should improve anything regarding this unless you've got some details. I'm glad you've got some experience too, because that's on the board, because that's pretty important.
Thanks on that, Jack.
Joe, we'll make sure that we, before we make any purchases, we're going to look at probably multiple machines, hydraulic and electric, different horsepowers, different ranges. And we'll have pretty in-depth conversation about what one we decide and what's going to work best for us.
Yeah, I agree.
We're going to have to look at the whole entire situation and what's feasible to maintain, because that's ultimately the cost that you have to look at the future. The initial cost, but we're going to definitely have to look at what it costs to keep it going. That's the kicker.
Uh huh. Yeah.
I guess the beauty of this whole deliberation is that it's it's happily FEMA funded. They'd be happy for us to save money and do something better for the port.
All right. Thanks, guys. I just know what kind of things I run into with my boats. I mean, I got hydraulic pot pumps and stuff, and then I got electric hydraulics that run my blocks and stuff, and that's super cool. But when starter motors and other stuff start going out, yeah, I'm pretty smart at it, but it's better for me to get an electrician with the hydraulic part, you know. Heck yeah, I can take that apart in a matter of minutes and put it back together. That's all I wanted to come up with, though, guys. Thanks a lot, Travis and Jack.
Absolutely. Good question.
Anything further on this item? Okay. Hearing none, let's go to commissioner's comments. Let's start with Sharon.
Okay, commissioner's comments. I just more than a comment, I have a question for Gary. There was nothing mentioned in here tonight about where we are with the maintenance on the travel lift. I mean, are we looking into having that done, or where are we going with that?
So this is Travis. We have Pat Bay looking into options that we can use to apply to the travel lift. I should have that information back anytime. Some repairs are already being made, but we should have something by middle of the next week of what we're going to do with the future of the piping, I guess, and the fittings of what we're going to do. Does that answer your question?
Yes, I just want to make sure that we, get that taken care of, because it is a lot of money. So I appreciate that. Thank you.
Okay, anything further, Sharon?
No, just thank you, everybody. And I'm sorry that we're getting shut down again, but the port's handling it very well. Thank you. You guys take care.
Ken, do you have any comments? Commissioner's comments? Do you have any comments, Ken?
Richard, this is Ken. Were you talking to me?
Yeah, do you have any commissioner's comments you'd like to make?
Just the only comment is the port staff has obviously been working very hard last month, and the port looks very good. Thank you.
Okay. Joe, do you have comments?
Yeah. Thanks for the locks on the bathrooms. And good job, guys.
Joe, I have a question for you. Any information at all about the season opener?
Oh, what was that, Richard?
Do you have any information at all about the crab season opener? I see you've been out testing. So have you heard anything about when that's going to go?
No, we have a tri-state meeting tomorrow and a state of Oregon meeting tomorrow that I'll be involved in. It's probably looking like – it really depends a little bit on some whales. I heard there was some whales down off Trinidad, 17 or so humpbacks. And that has a lot to do with it with California. And I think Oregon's going to follow suit if California decides to shut down their northern area. Oregon would shut down the southern Oregon. Or vice versa, if California decides the whales are gone and they decide to open, Oregon would probably – open up from Rogue River Reef South just to help the Brookings bunch, because there's no crab here, and I don't think they'll be lucky to catch 100,000 pounds here from what I see. But I'll know a lot more tomorrow after my meetings.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
The only comment I have, I've been talking about southern resident killer whales a lot, and I'll just report to the group that the Pacific Fisheries Management Council took action on that Monday. They've decided to set a threshold for, and that threshold will be based on forecast ocean abundance north of Cape Falcon. If it falls below 966,000 from Chinook salmon, then there are some action items that will be triggered. One of those is to close the Oregon portion of the Klamath Management Zone from October 1st until March 31st if California's portion of the Klamath Management Zone is also shut down. That caused me a great deal of concern because we have a state-run bubble fishery here, usually starting October 1st. So I asked the question of the council and of the National Marine Fisheries Service if that closure was only for federal waters or if it included state waters. And the answer I got is that the intent is not to shut down a terminal area fishery of a small nature like the one we have. Based on what I'm told, that killer whale closure will not affect. So, that kind of puts that whole thing to bed until if and when it ever occurs that we get to the threshold. So that's my comments. That brings us now to the next regular meeting date, which is Tuesday, December 15th, 2020 at 6 p.m. I'm assuming that's going to be a teleconference as well. Is that your feeling, Gary?
I believe so.
Okay. All right, so we adjourn. Is there anything else for the group?
No.
All right, with that said, thank you all for participating. I know this is difficult, but it's what we're doing. This is my 80th remote meeting now since April 1st, and it's getting to feel kind of regular, but I still don't like it, but that's how it is. So with that, I will adjourn the meeting.
Good night.